from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Drew bringing us a different vibe, I think, today on the music. It's all over. I like it. I mean, we went from, not Jock Jams, whatever that was at 11:30. I can't remember the name of the song. Just like pump me up type of music.
That was We Will Rock You.
There you go. We Will Rock You. To now, whatever this is. I like this. It's good. Hope everybody's feeling good on a Wednesday here in Kansas City.
I downloaded some music for my, you know, my flight later.
Yeah, of course. What's the playlist when we're on there?
All over the place. I downloaded like
your own songs. You just listen to your own songs.
It was like 10 different albums I hadn't heard that had probably come out in the last like 10 years. So I just put a bunch of stuff on there so I could kind of like just choose what I wanted.
I actually do need to do that real quick before I go.
It takes 5 seconds.
Yeah, I do need to update the music choices.
Yeah, you gotta have something to listen to. And I've
listen to the Royals game while we're on the flight, probably.
Well, that's a good point. You can't, the Odyssey app's not gonna work up there. Are you paying for Wi-Fi?
Oh, on the flight, usually I do.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't usually pay for the Wi-Fi.
For a long enough flight.
Interesting. It's good to know. I didn't know. I've never been Wi-Fi on a flight guy.
You've never used the Wi-Fi on an airplane?
One time when I left my phone at the kiosk, I need to
I don't think I've ever used. I've never used Wi-Fi either because I'm curious. Sure
I'll use the free like movie Wi-Fi. Sure. Or now Southwest does like the iMessage. I'll sign up for that. But I don't pay for the Wi-Fi.
Am I in the minority? How many people have actually paid for the Wi-Fi on a flight before? I feel like
it depends on the length.
I mean, if I'm flying from here to Denver and it's a short flight, no. But this is what a 2 hour and two and a half hour flight or something. Yeah. Maybe you want to watch them. You know, you said they have the movies built in, but maybe you want to watch something on Netflix instead or something.
I download before I go.
You can do that.
I get on the apps. I decide what movie, what show I'm going to watch, and I download it.
But if you want to watch MLB.TV, you want to watch the game, like actually,
that's a different problem.
Yeah, like live
sporting events. Sorry, yeah, that's what it's been. Like if you were flying during again a Royals game, you want to watch it on the app, you can.
Yes. I mean, I just feel like I gotta let that one go. I don't know. Maybe I'll pay for it. I would like to watch the Royals play, so that's fair. But outside of that, no, very rarely pay for the Wi-Fi.
Reminder, Josh Vernier is on deck show tonight, 6 o'clock, right here on 96.5 The Fan. Also, of course, the game on 96.5 The Fan. He will join us at 12:30. Let's talk about the Royals, though, because you and I differ on this a little bit. Right now, we both think they're going to end up making the playoffs. We're on the same page there. But what happens when they make it?
I think that the more I look at where the rotation currently sits, and I'll admit that these stats are before Cole Reagan's pitch last night. I don't know. His ERA probably went up 0.1. That's how it works. Before last night, Reagans was 10-7 with a 3.18 ERA, Lugo 14-7, 302, Singer 9-8, 3.18, and Walker 10-6 with an ever-lowering 3.33 ERA. Lorenzen also has a sub-3 ERA since he's been pitching for the Royals. You can't recreate that in a following year. You are going to be unable to recreate that, which means it feels really important to get playoff wins now. I'm putting more pressure than not just making the postseason, making some noise in the postseason, because I don't think you can recreate that starting rotation or that level of starting rotation easily. So every year it's going to be harder to win in the postseason than now. Pitching is the currency in the postseason, and you've got it in spades. You go five deep, no team, or one team, maybe the Mariners, and they can't hit. Go five deep in the rotation right now. It's more like four in Lorenzo.
Yeah, I don't know if they're really going five deep, but I get
four
what you're
deep,
saying.
Same vibe. But
I agree with you on the first three, which is, hey, you know, are you getting Seth Lugo All Star Game? Seth Lugo career year? Seth Lugo again? Yeah, I mean, the odds would tell us no. To your point, you know, are you getting his performance along with Reagan's, along with Singer in 1 year? There's a decent chance no. So I hear you. My only thing is this team won 56 games a year ago, and I know it's a different team, but they won.
That's what I'm erasing.
But they won 56 games a year ago. If they make the postseason, like, we all want them to win the series, duh. We all want them
before
to.
Before the season, what I've just accepted, know, they made the postseason and got swept on wild card. Yeah, I probably would have.
Yeah, look, and I'll be disappointed. But I think, you know, especially when they haven't even clinched yet, but to now already be saying, like, well, if they don't, they have to win the series now for it. What? Or it's not successful for you? Like, what?
Or it's disappointing. Does that, you know?
Well, sure. I'm disappointed if the.
I can look at 160.
I'm disappointed if it went when KU gets bounced in the Sweet 16. Sure. I'm disappointed if, you know what I mean? Like, I'm disappointed if the Royals get bounced in the ALCS, of course. Like, I'm disappointed. Sure. I think everybody's disappointed when your team doesn't win the ultimate prize. The Niners fans were disappointed with last season.
Year to year, team to team, we talk about this with the Bills. The Royals should feel real pressure to perform in the postseason because of what the rotation is now and how hard it's going to be to recreate that. I know what this sounds like. This sounds like I'm moving the goalpost a little bit, and I'm changing what, you know what? I actually don't think moving the goalpost is all that bad. I think sometimes you should. Once you get a better sense of what the expectation is and not what we thought it would be, I don't think it's unreasonable to say, okay, now my expectations have changed. Forget 56 wins. There were like seven players on last year's opening day roster. They were on this year's opening day roster. No Reagans, no Lugo, no Waka, no Urseg, Vinny was on the team half the year last year. It's a different team. They have proven to me over the course of almost eight full months of this year that they are a really good baseball team. And I just, in the years in which you have this kind of pitching, like if I'm the Mariners, I'm pissed that this is the kind of starting rotation I get and we can't hit worth a lick. The problem is that the Royals are going to go into the postseason likely, no matter what.
Weren't the Mariners in a playoff team last year? That's why they're disappointed.
Yes, but the Royals this year, and that's, you know, and like this year, they're recreating the starting rotation. They can't hit. Like, it's the same problem where last year they caught lightning in a bottle because all their offensive players did well. They lost their opportunity to win in the time they did. Now they might miss the post, probably will miss the postseason for the Mariners. I think you got to take advantage of it because now for the starting rotation. It's going to look different next year.
I think we're agreeing more than we actually realize with this. I don't know if it's just the way we're wording it. Like, what you just said about the Mariners, I agree. Everything you said, we're viewing it in a different light. The Mariners had a really good team. They got bounced in the playoffs early. Of course they were disappointed. We're in agreement there. They also were a team that won their, no, they didn't win their division last year, but they had bigger expectations. The Royals, there's no way for them to fall short of expectation anymore.
I still think that's possible based on this rotation.
You know, that's, we're not talking anymore about just making the playoffs short of expectation. You're saying if they lose the wild card series, that is falling short of expectation. Correct. And I'm saying that I think we're in agreement, but we're using the different word. I will be extremely disappointed. Moving the goalpost, the only way I usually agree with you on that would be, all right, if it's a whether it's, we're talking about NBA finals, or let me use that for example. It's a best of seven series and I'm up 3-0. Oh, you damn well better win that series. You know, that
I didn't feel that way before, but I do now.
To me, that you can move
the goalposts. That's how I feel about this rotation. They have a starting rotation that's going to be the best in the American League when they walk into the postseason. Now, to the text line's point for why I should maybe cool it on the goalpost moving is they're like, look, with this bullpen, makes me feel like the other Chiefs scored 35 points in a game and gave up 36. So there is still, it's not a perfect pitching staff. Obviously, the bullpen had its struggles last night and has never quite got its footing for a good chunk of the season. I get greedy when, I didn't expect the rotation to be this good. That's why my goalpost where my line was, and in July or June probably, right? Why my expectation would have been different. Why I would have been like, oh no. But the more we are, what, a week? 10 days away from September? And they have the best rotation in baseball, arguably, based on statistically. They probably, I think it's the fourth best.
If they end up winning the AL Central, and they win the Central, and they're 3.5 back right now, but if they win the Central and they end up as one of the top two seeds.
Would you change your?
Yes. Yeah. I think
so.
That's
you'd move your goalposts differently depending on the end of the season. You're not willing to do it in August.
If they get in as the sixth wild card team and they get bounced in the wild card round, I don't think we can be like, what a failure and all. Disappointing. Sure, the Diamondbacks were disappointed. They made the World Series last year as the last team in. I promise you, their fans were disappointed. They came that close. We were disappointed in 14, even though it was a magical ride. So the word choice to me matters a little bit there. I hear what you're saying. I really do. And it'll be interesting. I mean, you're right. In June or July, we at that point were like, well, now we'll be disappointed if they don't make the playoffs. I'm with you. My expectation now is, yes, Cody, for them to make the playoffs. But this team has already exceeded expectation. There's no way they can underachieve that, not get to that expectation level. They've already hit that.
I am officially willing to bury all of the what they were last year talk. It's August 21st.
So you don't want to bring it up even when you're going to bring it up in 3 weeks when they have the biggest turnaround in MLB history? Don't bring it up then.
Well, that's just stating last year, man. That's just stating a fact. Like, what we're referencing is this, like, I can't put different expectations on them because they stunk last year. And again, I don't,
Well, then on opening day, how come you didn't have them winning 88 games, man? Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, we have to still
because there was a lot of unknown. I didn't know what Luka was going to be. I didn't know what Walker was going to be. I didn't know what those guys were going to be. We're August 21st now. I know what they are.
Yeah, I hear you. I
know what they've been.
I just think it's extremely unfair to suddenly, now that they're actually performing at this level, say, well, they need to win. You know, they got to win multiple series or win a series in the playoffs now. I mean, that's just not fair. I mean, I just think that's ridiculous.
They're going to be worried about just making the postseason first, I'm sure, because that's the way they have to treat it.
They haven't clinched yet.
They have to treat it game at a time, which I understand. But I'll tell you that they're going to feel the same way once the postseason starts. But, teams who are playing on that team actively, do. I was just going back through last year's lineup now just to see exactly how different it is. Salvi, still there. I mean, these are the guys who played the most games for the Royals last year. Most games for the Royals. Bobby Witt Jr., MJ Melendez. And MJ Melendez is a full-time player still, but, gets spelled out here and there. Salvi. But then it's like Edward Olivares. Drew Waters played 98 games for them. Nick Prado played 95 games for this team last year. 95? He hadn't even gotten to the big leagues yet. Kyle Isbell, 91. Freddie Firmino only played 70. He's actually been kind of a nice bump.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even remember. Nicky Lopez was on this team for 70.
Yeah, they traded him to Atlanta.
70 games last year. I don't even remember some of these guys playing that number of games. Hunter Dozier got 30 full games in. And so, it's such a different squad. Last year, they were just guessing. They were just throwing guys. The evaluation was very real. They're like, Dozier, are you any good? Nope, moving on. Nikki, can you? Nope, okay, next one. Prot, nope. All right, we're just going to move through the list. I'm a little bit tired of hearing you can't have expectations for this team because of what they were a year ago. Because a year ago, I just don't think is who they are.
We got to move on to say, but it's not just the expectation. We've already moved to another level of that, though. Sure. Like, if you want to say
the expectation
is that they make the postseason, you're going a step further already, though, and say now the expectation is they got to win a series in the postseason. And all I'm saying is we just disagree on this. I just don't believe that, is fair. Like, well, yeah, I mean,
the original expectation was 75, 76, 77 wins from us anyways.
I would have locked in 76 before the season.
We were 76, 77, and I think it was 78. Like, we were all in the same range.
All wrong.
And all going to be
well short.
12-plus games short, nah, depending on...
20 would be nice.
I don't think they're going to get to 98. I don't think anybody's getting to 98.
All right,
we'll get to the trash of the day here in about 5 minutes or so. But back to the Chiefs, and you know, we were talking about improving the defense because we played you that audio of Bill Belichick saying, like, you know, the three-peat, he thinks the defense is going to have to improve in multiple areas. One area they did improve drastically was what they got out of George Karlaftis. He suddenly was a 10.5 sack guy. Now you enter year number three, and the question, of course, is, okay, is there another level to that? And if there is another level to that, then suddenly, Cody, he's viewed as a top 15, top 12 pass rusher in football. I mean, if he goes from 10.5 to 12, you get into that really special territory.
As correctly pointed out by Arrowhead Pride, if you start looking at historically, since, like, you know, the last decade, 15 years of pass rushers, the only time that matters, because if we go back to the 80s, they're not tracking stats the same way. Through two NFL seasons, Karlaftis has 112 pressures. Since 2011, there's only been 8 guys to do that. That or more. Yannick Ngakoue, J.J. Watt, tell me if you recognize any of these names. Ryan Kerrigan, who did have a really good run in the league. Joey Bosa, Khalil Mack, Von Miller, Aiden Hutchinson, and Micah Parsons. Pretty good group. Pretty good company he is keeping. Because what I've done with George Karlaftis is just praying he stays the same. I would take that last year's performance out of George Karlaftis 10 straight years for the next 10 years.
Oh, sure.
And I wouldn't even complain.
So would he, Cody. He'd be a 100-plus sack guy.
But it keeps me from asking the question, which is there still one more level in George Karlaftis we have yet to see? And honestly, I still think his ceiling is better than what he was last year. I don't think you can look at those numbers and look at the players who have done that in their first 2 years and not tell me that there's a third gear that might exist in George Karlaftis's game. Do I think he's going to become J.J. Watt in year three? Probably not. I think that would probably be aiming a little too high to say he's going to turn into that or Micah Parsons. But there's no doubt to me that George Karlaftis should have expectations of getting better this year and just being okay if he stays the same, right? If he stays the same, I'm good.
Yeah, again,
but
I think,
let's put a little pressure. Like, let's see one more half step forward. Can you be even better than you were? That's how he's probably treating his season.
So is it disappointing if he doesn't get 13?
No, I just told you, I'm fine if he gets 10.
I'm kidding.
Here we go.
I'm kidding.
If he gets the exact same number of sacks, I am totally fine.
Let's have the baseball equivalent with the same thing.
No, I'm kidding.
No, he has an opportunity, especially now that we know for sure Chris Jones is back, and we know the opportunity that presents if you're Karlaftis. So it's not to take away from his 10.5 sack season, but when you have Chris Jones in the middle, it allows you to take that leap again, potentially, this year. You know, he once again worked in the offseason with Tamba Ali, as did Felix Anudike Uzama. That, to me, will also swing what type of season Karlaftis has. If you think he's getting more than 10.5, well, then Charles Omenihu, when he comes back, maybe around that Raiders game, we think, in of October, does he come back as the same guy last year, where he was great? The minute he was back from his suspension, he had 6-plus sacks?
He's on fire.
Big leader for this team. He was a problem, because all of a sudden, teams had to deal with Chris Jones and Omenihu and Karlaftis. If they can have those three clicking again, that's where I think Karlaftis has a chance to excel even more than he did a year ago. Otherwise, I think it can also be if Omenihu is not that level again, I think it could be a little bit of a struggle for Karlaftis to get back to 10.5 sacks. And I know it's not just sack numbers, but at that position, that's kind of how we view these guys. But there's other elements to that. You know, what's your pressure rate and things like that? But
I care about sacks.
You know, percentage wise of Karlaftis getting to 10.5 again, I think there's probably like a 75-80% chance he gets back to 10.5 sacks. Exceeding that, I think it's like a 10% chance that he actually can get to 11 or more sacks this year.
I don't think that's because, again, the thing about, and this is why I'm saying I think that there's a year three progression, is he already progressed. Like a lot of the guys on that previous list, they all got better in year two. I don't care if you go from Yannick Ngakoue to Joey Bosa, they all got better in year two. George Karlaftis went from 48 total pressures in year one to 64 total pressures in year two. He upped his sack total by multiple sacks during that time. Most of those guys in year three took yet another leap forward in year three.
So we'll find
pretty
out.
Pretty much everybody on that list took another leap forward in year three. So, I mean, he's already in the company, and what? Most, if not, I think literally every single one of those saw a jump again.
But the question is, yeah, did you jump in year three? I mean, I bet you there's
no. They showed a jump year one to year two and year two to year three.
That's why they're in that's why they're in that elite company. I'm saying like how many players have had a jump from week one, year one to year two? Like Carl Lofton said, I bet a bunch. The question is what you said. The year two to getting to three. Because that's why we when you say those names, the reason why those names stand out is because they elevated past it. Just being that. They have elevated to being elite, top tier, in some cases, future Hall of Fame type of pass rushers.
And the reason why I'm mentioning their names is because he's in the same pressure category through 2 years as they are. Like, I'm not just bringing them up randomly. I'm bringing them up because that's the company he's keeping right now. He's on the low end of that company because... I just told you it was 112 pressures through two games, 157 for Micah Parsons through 2 years. So I'm not saying there's not a difference in quality from the top to the bottom of the list, but every single one of those guys I mentioned before continued their growth in year three.
Yeah, there was a button that was stuck in here.
What happened?
People said, did the studio just explode? It's dead air right now. And I was like, we'll be here. What?
We are back. Yeah. The dump button here. I looked over and...
So the dump button got stuck?
There's nothing.
So I can't cuss now?
There's no. You technically can. You technically can. We have some delay. That
takes some time to build up.
But I looked over and both lights were flashing, and there's nothing touching it right now. My laptop is not touching it, and I looked, and the delay said 0 seconds. I was like, oh.
So was that? I thought Cody started beating up Gold after he said George couldn't get to 11 sacks. All right. So yeah.
I thought the conversation really picked up there at the end too. You guys missed out on some good stuff. I was making some strong comparisons.
Cody offered to make a bet that he'll never sing again on the show if Carl Loftus doesn't get to 12 sacks. You guys missed that. Yeah. All right, let's get to the trash of the day. All right, let's go to Florida. You guys remember, we've talked about a little CNG pizzeria. Like, it's been discussed before.
Oh, it's been discussed.
This is one thing that I don't think you should try to do, and we should not try to do. So there's a story in Florida about a man that's now accused of impersonating a existing pizzeria in a scheme to defraud tourists. So if we're going to go CNG pizza, it needs to be CNG pizza, not CNG pizza operating as... some other company.
Yeah, we don't want somebody pretending to use our name.
This guy's been arrested in South Florida. He faces a felony charge. He's accused of impersonating a well-known pizza parlor in a years-long scheme to defraud them. So basically what he did, he's accused of posing as a delivery man for a pizza place called Roman's Pizza in Miami. He delivered undercooked or raw pizzas to tourists that were staying in hotels near like the Miami airport. In addition to delivering bad pizzas, he allegedly would post fake flyers advertising the existing real pizzeria to tourists near their hotel rooms. And it says this went on for years, resulted in complaints to the Better Business Bureau, negative reviews, upset customers. So it damaged this real pizzeria. He's also facing an aggravated battery charge after he allegedly fled from hotel staff and hit a staff member with his vehicle. Just to add more to this.
Okay. So this would be like us starting CNG Pizza, but then we put a bunch of flyers out saying we're Minsky's, and then we just give them bad pizza.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so Minsky's is like, what the hell? Why are all these people saying that we're serving them undercooked pizza?
Mm-hmm.
We're not doing that. And it turns out we were just doing it under the guise.
Mm-hmm.
That's honestly a pretty good. That's the same as Pasquale's when
Chuck E. Cheese.
If you missed a Chuck E. Cheese during the pandemic, was claiming to be a place called Pasquale's and then just delivering pizza under
that was their
name.
Delivery arm of Chuck E. Cheese, basically.
So,
yeah.
Oh, man. It stinks for the pizzeria. And he really
ruined their business.
This is a clever scheme. I'll give the guy credit for a clever work on the scheme. Good thing he got busted. So that this business isn't permanently altered in this. Also, why didn't you just deliver like mediocre pizza? Then nobody ever complains and nobody finds out. You can't just deliver like a half frozen Totino's and hope nobody notices.
Yeah, where was he getting the undercooked pizzas from?
I gotta think it was like an air fryer and like, or like a one of those like cheap pizza ovens that are like $200 and like some DiGiorno's.
Yeah, but
right?
DiGiorno,
I mean, because he's got us to profit off of this thing.
But that's what I'm saying. I don't know. Let's say the pizza, he's charging $20 for a large pizza. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, at the store, if you buy a DiGiorno, what's a DiGiorno run these days? Like, it's gone up.
$7, $8 Yeah, something like that.
So, okay, so he's making, you know, $8 to $10 off of each one. How many of these is he doing?
You know.
That's all. I mean, you'll be delivering a lot of fake pizzas.
Did it say like how much he was making off of this?
Everybody's getting mad because there's delays because he has to fire up his.
That's the thing. It's like, how is he kicking out these? Again, they were undercooked, so he didn't leave them in for the full 18 minutes or whatever it was on the frozen pizza. Yeah. He put them in for like 8 minutes and said, good enough. Broil the top, make it look like it's done, and it's still raw. That's the trash of the day. Up next, we get to the Chiefs Red Half Hour here on 96.5 The Fan. And the cornerback position is getting more interesting, especially after some comments from Steve Spagnuolo yesterday. And what should they do about it? We'll explain next.
This is Cody and Gold on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan, brought to you by Heartland Men's Health, the leader in men's sexual health. Thousands of men have been successfully treated for low T, ED, and more, all with discretion and compassion. Make your appointment at heartlandmenshealth.com.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Welcome in to the Chiefs Red Half Hour. Every day at 11:30 with Cody and Gold on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5 The Fan.
Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. It is the Chiefs Red Half Hour on Cody and Gold. We're going to talk to Vern in 1 hour from now. We'll get right back into the Royals, who are trying to find a way to still win this series against the Angels when they send Michael Lorenzen to the mound. But let's talk some Chiefs football here, because I thought some comments yesterday from Spags, not only about the defensive line and what they've been getting there so far, but the cornerback once again is the most interesting thing, because we know early on in training camp they acknowledged that they wanted someone to emerge. Nobody did. I mean, final preseason game is tomorrow. I don't think suddenly someone's just going to emerge in the final preseason game, because it's weird how they're going to play the corners anyway. Because if you don't have a clear number two corner, how much do you play those guys? You already have...
And half of them haven't been healthy.
That's the issue. Jalen Watson's been banged up. Nazi Johnson at one point was banged up. He was last year as well. Joshua Williams did not practice yesterday. So what do you do at cornerback number two right now?
So we spent a bunch... One, I'm just going to tell you, you are two Chiefs fan glasses half full. If you are buying the story that is... Well, they like all their corners too much. They just can't decide. I don't know which Mercedes to drive. They're all just so nice. That's not what's happening.
No.
It's just not what's just not. That's not real life.
Well, they told us, Cody, beginning of camp, they wanted someone to emerge, and nobody's emerged. Not in a pot. It's not like they've all emerged. They're like, wow.
Yeah. That was so where the question first came up, so I think, is when Spag said.
Yes. You're not, you're two glasses half full if you're just like, they love them all too much. It's just too hard. Like if I put three giant lollipops in front of my kid, I don't know which one. It's not that. I think why have we spent so much time talking about shopping for a running back a not valuable position by almost every NFL metric, and instead talk about it with corner. If we're going to shop for running back on the free agent market when people go to get cut or when the rosters start getting full, or you know this, the random veterans who get traded 2 weeks before the season starts, why not go shopping for corner too? Joshua Williams is hurt. Jalen Watson's never been healthy, and neither is Nazi Johnson. They actually don't really have a guy who has been healthy for six consecutive weeks to even have a chance to win the job at corner two. And so if they're shopping, why not shop at corner?
So a couple things. Yes, they have not had anybody emerge, and so it's not because they love everybody in this cornerback two room right now. They thought Joshua Williams would emerge, and he just hasn't. My pushback on the trading for the veteran would just be the same answer you gave me yesterday about running backs.
Which is, if it's a problem, you can solve it later. Like,
well, that's something that'll be available around the trade deadline. I would say the same thing. Usually, that is also a position corner that week 8 or 9, whatever the hell sure. The trade deadline is, that there is some disgruntled veteran on a crappy team or some team that's like, okay.
It's usually Darby. For decades straight, it was
somebody,
Darby.
You know, or yeah. Later on in the year, you know, if somebody like that. So that would be my...
First inclination.
First
sure.
Thought on the scenario. The other one is still, though, Cody, that you have a number one corner who's one of the best in the league in Trent McDuffie. Yeah. And if your number two corner is giving you average play, that's not that unusual in the NFL. No, and who are you getting that is better? I know nobody's emerged. We all agree. But who is actually out there that gets cut from a team? And you're right, there will be somebody. But sure. who is that is on week one coming in, learning the defense, and is going to be better than the three? You always want to upgrade. I'm with you. You always want to look for better players. Duh. But who is that available at the end? The difference between the running back conversation you and I had yesterday, I was saying you can find some vet to be running back two. You would
and
admit
just give
running,
up a
you
sixth.
Would admit, you would admit yeah. Running back two is much different than corner two. Corner two is starting for this team, you know what I mean? So
correct.
So there's a little bit of a difference. And the free agent market, I mean, do these guys, these are truly players available
Available. I mean, Stephon Gilmore was available a week ago and they didn't pay
him. Got signed for $8-9 million by the Vikings. So yeah. Who's available right now? Like Xavier Howard many years ago would have been interesting. I don't know if there's much there.
He's falling on hard times. He was a good corner.
31 years old. Adoree Jackson, the Giants. He's 29, played in 70% of the snaps. He's available. Oh, old friend Steven Nelson. You want to bring him back?
Nope. Want the first two more than that.
I'm good with them rolling with these three, even if nobody's emerged heading into the season.
So part of me is just like, it's like running back. This isn't even about somebody who's definitively going to win the job goal because, yeah, in a perfect scenario, you just go out and get the guy who wins it. It's the same thing we've talked about with running back. I want protection. Adoree Jackson offers me protection. Nazi Johnson and Jalen Watson have had a hard time being on the field physically, and I'm kind of starting to wonder, like, and who's to say Adoree Jackson couldn't win the job? Couldn't be better. Xavier Howard couldn't be better.
Well, I mean,
than the options.
You're right. I could. You were not wrong. I could say that about a lot of players in the NFL that are sitting on the street.
But I don't think that's like a total long shot. Based on the, and like be better might just be available.
Yeah.
And so part of it is leaning into that end of it. And I think that it just offers you protection more than it does anything else. I do like that we talk about corner and running back being problems later. The way I used to talk about like myself when I was like getting after a little too hard on like a Friday night, that's future Cody's problem. I don't care. Current me would like to have all the fun in the world. Future me, that's their problem. They'll deal with it. Future me always hates past me, which means, you know, like, would you rather just start solving those problems now?
This team, typically we bring up the track record of the secondary.
And it is very good. That's the one thing that would cause me hesitation to be like, screw it, just stick with the three.
And that admittedly is why it is surprising that no one corner has emerged as the number two corner. But we just, I mean, if I would ask you this 2 months ago, and I get it, hey, training camp is training camp, and that's why they have it, but 2 months ago, if I would have said, hey, Jalen Watson, Nazi Johnson, Joshua Williams, do you feel good about those three, one of them being the corner, number two? And you'd be like, yeah, oh yeah, and their track record's good, they develop great, Dave Merritt does a hell of a job, will be a defensive coordinator in this league very, very soon if he could have had the gig maybe this year out in San Francisco. So that is all true, and I still think it's true today, which is why I'm fine rolling into week one. I don't care really who starts. Josh Williams, Jalen Watson, Nazi Johnson, and maybe it is just two.
This is a
healthier.
Little like, yeah.
And then late, I mean, if it becomes a real liability,
solve it.
Then I think they could be aggressive in the trade market. I really am not that concerned that somebody, am I surprised that somebody didn't emerge? Yes. Worried about it? Not really.
We know that the Chiefs can win football games despite a glaring problem. Because if it is, because Juwan Taylor was a glaring problem for a month straight to start the season last year, maybe 2 months straight to start the season last year before you do it. But because of their schedule, man, saying let's solve that problem later when you go Ravens, Bengals, Falcons, Chargers to start the season, like, you're going to be real obvious it's a problem in a hurry, and you're going to have to solve it by the bye week before you take on the 40, like, because their schedule gets easier later. Like, you'd almost rather have the problem solved before this, because the schedule's way easier after the first 6 weeks. If for some reason they're 6-0, like, if they're undefeated after that 49ers game after week 7, we might actually be talking about 17-0 in this town. It's not that there are no difficult games remaining, but, I don't know, 70% of their most, if you made me rank out the most difficult games on their schedule, like 3 or 4 of them are before you hit week 7.
Yeah, on paper it looks like that.
49ers, Ravens, Bengals for sure would be on that list.
I just think they still, even if we, you know, look, they're not replacing L'Jarius Sneed. We knew that a long time ago.
Yeah, no.
But can...
And he might, you know,
the collective effort, the collective grouping of the number two corners, can they eventually get it done? Yeah, I think the answer is yes. Can Josh Williams be out there for, you know, the same amount of snaps that L'Jarius Sneed was a year ago? Probably not. Probably not. He hasn't separated. But can a combination of Josh Williams and a healthy, when he's healthy, Jalen Watson do it? Yeah, I think so. Like, it's not like they have three rookies. It's not like they have three rookies they're planning on rotating in. They have multiple guys that have played in this league for multiple years.
I don't love that now no one's healthy. Like, now every single one of the three has had a stretch of time this training camp that they were unavailable. I don't love that.
Sure.
Because,
that's fair.
Because then it's just like, it's not about you choosing the one you like the best. It's you're just starting the one that week who's physically available to play. Congratulations, Nazi Johnson. You're a corner two this week because you are physically available. Yeah,
the good news is they have 15
days. You're physically available.
15 days. Josh Williams did not practice yesterday. He's not going to play tomorrow, I'm assuming. That's a guess, but I'm assuming. 15 days for him, unless it's a serious injury. I guess they're going to, I think they'll have the full arsenal at cornerback available if they, you know, from a health perspective, by the time they get to that Ravens game.
Well, and to your point, if they are, for whatever reason, 6-0, they don't have a problem. I think
then they don't have a real problem.
It's salvageable enough where they can make it work.
I don't think they're going to be 6-0 going into that stretch.
I don't think so.
Because the text line said, you say this every year and we lose to the Colts on a random Sunday. Oh, yeah. The Chiefs' losses come in the exact same fashion every year. They'll finish 13-4, 12-5. We'll all guess our predictions that Thursday of the game. We'll all be in that same range. Somebody will get like spicy and go with 14 wins occasionally. But for the most part, we'll all choose.
That was you last year, wasn't it?
Yeah. We'll all choose 12 or 13 games and we'll just kind of hover there. And their losses will come exactly the same way. It'll be one loss in the division, 1-2 against the really good teams in the league. So they'll lose 1-2 against Cincinnati, Buffalo, the Texans, the 49ers. So there's 1-2 of the losses, and 1 will be against the team you think they have absolutely no business losing to.
That'll be the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah. Russell Wilson will come carve them up for 280, and they'll lose 24-23 in the fourth.
Well, yeah, and that's also that
their losses look the same every year.
And that Steelers one is also in the middle of that tough stretch we acknowledge because of just the timing, right? Where they're playing around Christmas and they got a, how many games it is? What, is it 3 and 11.
No, it's 3 and 11 days.
Yeah. So that's where
there's one.
That's where you think there's just going to be one that they shouldn't lose heading into the season because of how difficult that could be.
Let's rank out. What's your current guess for game the Chiefs lose? They have no business losing this season. It's one every year.
Yeah. I mean, the Steelers is very high up there.
Mine currently is Saints at home. No reason to ever. That is the
that
most.
That one might really.
That is the
you,
most.
Actually.
Never have any business. Losing to Dennis Allen. Derek Carr's had good games against
the Chiefs. I don't think it'll be that one, only because that should be, even if you think he's out for a longer period of time, that should be Hollywood Brown should be ready.
It's going
to
be Tampa Bay. It's going
to
be Tampa at home. November 4th.
Baker Mayfield.
It's a night game.
Baker versus for Mahomes again.
Yeah.
They should never lose to Tampa at home and somehow to be like, what did you
do? Is that
do?
A Thursday night game?
I actually think, I know last year
of
was weird.
Of the December games, it'll be the road game against the Browns on the short week.
So this is, you mentioned the one divisional game, and we all know last year the Chiefs lost on Christmas Day against the Raiders. We also know the Broncos got them on a surprise game. This year, the division, based off of Gardner Minshew starting with the Raiders, based off of Herbert coming into the season hurt, Bo Nix looks promising during camp. They actually might sweep the division this year, though. They might go back to doing that. Yeah. And
they
did
that plenty before.
And they did. Last year was just a weird year. I actually think it's more likely this year that in a weird way than last year, based off us agreeing that this is a better football team. And Gardner Minshew can have a couple good starts each year, but I don't know when the first time the Chiefs play the Raiders, October 27th. By then, the luster and the fun story will be over already for Gardner Minshew after he wins week one against the Chargers.
You mentioned the Browns. That it's not even going to be against Deshaun either. It's going to be against Jameis Winston, who's going to be licking his fingers for he's eating dubs on the sideline. That's what it's going to be.
It won't even be the starting quarterback. It'll be Jameis.
Oh, yeah.
Jameis Winston in any game could throw for 112 yards and five picks or 405 touchdowns, and I'd believe it. Most inconsistent quarterback of all time. Yeah. Swing.
I thought you were
going to
say, Winston, 400 yards, five touchdowns, and four picks, actually.
The picks happen either way. Other parts of the stats that don't make sense.
In the last pick, he loses the game. Like that would be also a Jameis Winston thing. 400 yards, five touchdowns, playing great. Fourth quarter, throws a pick six, and the Chiefs win.
Someone says, if we lose to the Saints, just be ready for the Texans to blow up about how terrible we are. I'm like, every year, man. We've all done this. Yeah. That person who said they lose to the Colts, I've been on the radio for every single one of these. How did they lose that game? I was thankful last year. I was off the whole week of Christmas. So they lost that game, and I got to just never talk about it. Just mind erase it. Pretend like that game never existed in my brain.
That's right.
I never spent a single second on air talking about that miserable Christmas day loss.
I had a rotating lineup of guests. Speck co-hosted for an hour with me that day.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, we had Aaron Latt. Was Aaron Latt? No, we had Rob Collins maybe stopped by.
I think Matt swung by. Maybe.
I was at a Hollywood casino that day. I remember doing that show. But anyway, so yeah, you're right. Yeah. You didn't have to talk about that one. There's always some week. And I told you guys, full disclosure, heading into the season, I refuse. I really don't care what happens in week three or week 12. No matter how bad it looks in that individual game, none of you, I'm just being honest, none of you are going to be able to convince me that, just not good enough. This team can't win the Super Bowl. They just aren't good enough. It doesn't freaking matter.
If they were 5-5, I don't even know if they were 5-5.
As long as Patrick Mahomes is healthy, they could look bad for three straight weeks, and you're not going to convince me that, guys, they just can't figure it out. This defense is just not good enough this year. BS.
Somebody said
that is not going to be a conversation that I'm really going to entertain that much. You're going to have a hard time getting me upset about something that happened in a game this year, especially early. After the Lions game, people were saying they're not good enough.
They're not going to have a moment where they're going to lose to Carolina. So somebody said they're not losing to Carolina.
That's too far down.
Yeah, the losses happen to a bad team, but they're still like 7-plus win team. Carolina might win four games. Carolina might win four games.
They're not losing to them.
They're not like could be in contention for number one overall pick bad they usually lose to.
I don't know if it's fair to say
maybe
Tampa's
the Titans
a bad
team year one or two of Andy.
I don't know if it's fair to say Tampa
might fall back to a 6 or 7 win team. Yeah, I'm not sold that they're winning nine again. They also only won 9 last year. Right, like it was great for Baker, and they won against a bad Eagles team at that point in time. But it's not like the Bucs won 11 games. They won 9 games last year and won a tiebreaker to get in the playoffs. I mean,
in all fairness,
they were unstoppable.
They are in the NFC. That also helps, obviously.
Well, because the whole NFC thing is what's interesting. Tom Brady was on Stephen A's podcast, and he was like, the number one threat to the Chiefs is the Rams. And it was talking about how the NFC poses the biggest threat to the Chiefs. I'm like, you sure?
They don't play till the Super Bowl.
I mean, they don't have to worry about those teams till the end. And last I checked, unless anyone on this show has stopped agreeing, the 5 best quarterbacks in the entire NFL are in the AFC. Right now, the 5 best quarterbacks are all on the AFC side.
I hear you.
The NFC has maybe quarterbacks 6, 8, and 11, but the 5 best are all in the AFC with Patrick Mahomes. So
I won't push back too much on that.
I don't know how you could look at this and not tell me still that. And I don't care which version of it is, Cincinnati or Buffalo or the Ravens or the Texans, wherever your squad is, those are the bigger threats to Kansas City. Right now, in a weird way, I would almost say the Texans are the biggest threat because they're cheap and young and talented.
It's a popular
pick. But it's still probably Cincinnati until Joe Burrow's arm just completely falls off.
Well, it's just the simple fact. It's a simple fact that you, as you said, are in the AFC. I mean, you don't worry about those teams until the Super Bowl. Like, yes, the Chiefs are going to play the 49ers in the regular season.
And by the time you get to the Super Bowl, they're probably a really good team.
Yeah, any team that you're playing the Super Bowl is good. There's better matchups than that. But of course, and right now it's unbalanced. I won't push back. I think there's a case to be made that maybe one NFC quarterback, people don't want to hear it because it's the Cowboys, but I still think Dak has a case to be, if he led the league in touchdowns last year too, the fifth best quarterback, but I'm not going to push back. You want to say Stroud is number five? I don't care. That's fine. But anyway, either way, the NFC, you're just not worried about. I don't care. Like, the Chiefs are playing the Niners in the regular season. I'll care that week, but it doesn't matter after that. The five best quarterbacks could all be in the NFC. I only have to worry about one of them.
In a weird way, yeah. Is it more help? Because you're more likely, I think, to get, like, I don't know, the best quarterback in the NFC through, because, like, they don't have to go through as much, the best team through. Like, I don't think the best team in the AFC, I'm not going to say always gets through. The Chiefs in this case do, typically. But, like, the most talented, like, the Chiefs have not been the most talented roster every year they've gone to.
That wasn't them last year.
Nope. The 49ers were the most talented roster in the league. They did not have the best quarterback, and that was obvious. But they did.
Were the better team all year than the Chiefs.
Correct. And they had the more talented roster.
AFC title.
But like in the NFC, the more talented roster, I think, is more likely to get through right now. Because in the AFC, once you throw all of those quarterbacks into a pool, Mahomes is getting through to the AFC championship game. But who's going to be the other squad on the other side? I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine. The Ravens could be 16-1, and I wouldn't be sure they're going to the AFC title game. Because they might face a hot Josh Allen coming into town before they go on and face him. The AFC is a much trickier group to figure out, and it's a really even harder for the other teams because they have to decide which one of them gets to face the Chiefs in the AFC title game. Just the one.
I know that the caveat is, again, Joe Burrow's health, but right. He's beaten in the playoffs the Ravens. He's beaten in the playoffs the Bills, throttled the Bills. Like, Joe Burrow's dominated the Bills every single time he's played. As long as he's healthy, I feel like Joe Burrow's the quickest answer, but
he's the only one who's actually given him a proper fight once or twice.
Yeah. Cincinnati, I mean, this is why Cincinnati's their biggest rival still in the AFC.
Yeah.
But it requires, of course, Joe Burrow making it through not only 17 regular season games, but also making it through a game or two in the postseason to ultimately face the Chiefs.
Do you see he's
in the AFC title game?
He's been wearing a glove a little bit. You know, he's been shuffling
Why
through,
is that?
He's been cycling through the Why glove
is that,
a little
Drew?
Bit. He says he's good. He's just trying to.
He's gonna throw like five picks different in the first things. 5 weeks. Well, what's Joe Burrow to lead the league in interceptions this year? Can I just take that? The glove's gonna throw him off. Probably he's gonna throw picks.
That's gonna be a losing bet.
Yeah. Someone on the text line.
He doesn't throw that many picks generally.
Here on 96.5, the fan, the Jay Southland Tow Service text line 913-586-7965. You see that text, Cody? It says someone. They look at the record against NFC teams. He's not talking about quarterbacks. He's talking about what KC has struggled with. My same thing applies, though. I hear you.
But against NFC teams in the Super Bowl, he's 3-1.
He's 3-1. Yeah. But also, while you're right, it may not be a direct quarterback comparison. To me, the logic's the same. I only am playing one of them. Like, you can say, like, these three teams are bad matchups. You're only having to play one of them in the Super Bowl.
The NFC, I got to play three.
Whoever represents the NFC obviously had a damn good season. So I mean, the NFC is so not a concern of mine if I'm in Kansas City.
I'm starting to think I need to be fading the Rams. Anytime everybody's all collectively like, the Rams this year, I'm like, all right, I'm the opposite. You just start feeling like you can't all be right.
It's the Sean McVay effect.
Someone's wrong. And here's the problem. It's hard for me to actually convince myself to go on the other side because I also am a big believer in Sean McVay. And Matt Stafford, when healthy, consistently looks like a top 10, sometimes 5 quarterback in the league.
Yeah, he's still
when
got
he
it,
is healthy but... and around, he has it. And if Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua are healthy at the same time, it's hard not to imagine they don't have a top 5 offense in the league to go with what has been a very effective running game under Sean McVay. I'm just feeling like, should I be fading them because, like, everyone's in on
the issue
Rams.
With the Rams will be post Aaron Donald. Like, what's that defense like? But know Sean McVay's going to scheme up that offense for there'll be some other player we've never heard of that ends up having a nice season. I mean, Ben Skoranek had a couple nice games for them, and now is it Jacksonville? He's somewhere else now
Ben
this year.
Skoranek.
I mean, but, like, that was a name that none of us knew, and he ended up having a couple big games for them last year.
The NFC, like, from just a broad picture perspective, we talk about the AFC and all the quarterbacks, the NFC is getting a lot better. Like, where they were 2 years ago, they're a lot better than that now with Kirk Cousins still being in the NFC, Dak obviously being there, Jordan Love seems to be the part.
But those are all
Jalen
quarterbacks,
Hurts maybe. Like,
8 through 12.
Correct. I'm just saying in general, it's not like we just look at the NFC and just toss them off to the side. In a way, no. You can, but I think that there's there's something to Dak obviously being the touchdown leader last season.
I just don't think he'll do it. You know, Dak's a very good quarterback. We've never argued
that. Should have argued that the Cowboys were up there in terms of talent with the 49ers. They weren't like to that superstar level, but in terms of production, they were just as productive from an all-around perspective. They just can't get
it done. Look, it's fun to see the Cowboys lose. I get it. And Jerry Jones caused a media circus all the time. All that is true. But as I said yesterday, the team that has things that could truly impact their season this year, to me, that's more the Eagles. All this contract stuff, once they start playing, to me, is not... It actually might help them motivation-wise for individual players trying to get paid, and Parsons and Lamb and Dak Prescott. The Eagles' story, maybe your coach not getting along with the quarterback, that has way more of a potential to blow up in your face during the season. That's a much, much more concerning to me than even though the Cowboys are just... It's low-hanging fruit. I get it. Like, make fun of the Cowboys, right?
Because they haven't played in very many important games of the last decade. They've played in some, though, more than others.
They stink in the playoffs. That's why they stink in the playoffs.
If they put it all together, they can make the Super Bowl.
Sure. All right, coming up next here on Cody and Gold, we get to what's trending, and then right back to the Royals, who the formula once again showed itself in a loss against the Angels. Plus, we'll have Josh Vernier, our Royals insider, join us on 96.5 The Fan.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.